technology downstairs is available if it gets too crowded in here or you feel like you need a little more space. Hearing room 50 has, I'm assuming, a closed circuit television or something that people can watch on. We're going to open a hearing on two bills at once, and we're just collecting background. If you've been watching the postings and the internet and so on, you know that this hearing probably can't be contained in just one day. So it'll be today and Wednesday both that we'll be listening to Senate Bill 430 and Senate Bill 699. I want to ask Judith, therefore, to describe those, and maybe by the time we get done with some descriptions and stuff and a few other comments, one or two of my colleagues will join me. Thank you. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 430 directs the state forester to manage 50% of the Tillamook and Clatsop state forests with the goal of protecting non-consumptive uses. It allows the state forester to increase the timber harvest to prevent losses in funding to county governments and schools if reductions in forest revenues occurs. We have received a potential revenue impact as well as we are expecting a potential fiscal impact on this measure. We do have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Now, for Senate Bill 699, directs the State Forestry Department to develop a plan to harvest the Tillamook State Forest on a 40-year schedule. It specifies elements of such a plan. It directs the department to submit the plan to an interim legislative committee for review and comment. It requires a person challenging the plan to post bond. It does limit persons who may challenge the plan to persons residing in certain counties. It requires the challenge to occur within 30 days after final adoption of the plan by the board, and it does declare an emergency effective on passage. Similarly, Senate Bill 699 does have a potential revenue impact, and again expecting a potential fiscal impact, as it does have, again, a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. My colleagues, I know that Senator Beyer is not here today. I also know that today's Senator Fisher's birthday, so maybe he started celebrating early. And I know that Senator Corcoran starts out very early in the morning from Cottage Grove. So I'm just hoping that they're here. Have you checked with their offices to see if they're around? Let's do that. Let me just make a couple comments that are things that I've thought about. The whole issue of the state forest and the forest plan and both of these bills is controversial. It's complicated. To me, the two bills represent what I've called bookends in a much larger discussion. And I've had argument from proponents of both bills that no, these aren't the bookends. There's much more extreme positions than these. I've had that comment from both ends. But for the purpose of having a public hearing and getting issues before us, it's just a good place to start. I just would encourage everybody addressing the committee to consider that kind of spectrum in their comments. You'll be commenting on both bills, for, against, whatever. Clearly, there's substantial interest in testifying. Because of that, we scheduled this hearing for both today and Wednesday. What I'll do is I will try somewhere around 9:15 or 9:30 to take testimony from people who have traveled more than 100 miles to get here. That's important because I don't want you to have to come back on Wednesday. Others may have to come back on Wednesday. Recognize this is a complicated situation. We're just going to do our best. Try to keep your comments brief, to the point, and please bear with me if I have to ask some of you to return on Wednesday. I'll do my best not to have that happen, but given everything that we've got, it's going to be tough to get to everybody. Staff has set out copies of both bills for the audience if you want them. They're back there in the corner. And so with that, what I've decided that I wanted to do is to begin by laying out a good bit of background. And so you're going to have to bear with us. I'm trying to learn on this issue as much as I can, and this puts it all on the public record. So bear with us as we lay out some background of this whole thing. So for start this morning, I'm going to ask Ross Holloway from the Oregon Department of Forestry if he'll come up and share with us and begin some background.
And Mr. Chair, we have Roy Wu, State Forester, with us.
Okay.
He'd like to start out.
Thank you.
Chair Shields and member of the committee, I'm Roy Wu, for a matter of record, interim State Forester. Our testimony will be basically in two parts. Staff will provide the background, as you mentioned. I think it will be really important for the conversation as we discuss how we integrated all the factors as we develop the management plan, the history of the lands. And then our second part will be a panel of past and present Board of Forestry Chair and also Dean of the College of OSU Forestry. I think it's very important that the committee, along with others here that understand the history of these lands, the process, the people that we involve, the groups we involve as we develop the plan that we have now. With that, Ross Holloway.
Thank you, Roy. Good morning, Chair Shields.
Good morning, Ross.
Members of the committee in absentia. My name is Ross Holloway, and I'm the State Forest Program Director for the Oregon Department of Forestry. And also with us at the table this morning is Steve Thomas, Assistant State Forester for our Forest Management Division, which includes the State Forest Program. I appreciate this opportunity to appear before the committee today to provide some information on state forest management, and more specifically the management of the Clatsop and Tillamook State Forests, which are the subject of the two bills being discussed today. And what I'd like to do this morning is just spend a few minutes providing you with an overview of state forests and their history, provide a little context where these lands are, and then a brief overview of the Northwest Oregon State Forest Management Plan. So to start out, the department manages about 789,000 acres of state forest lands, and this slide shows the names of the five state forests located around the state. You can see the Tillamook and the Clatsop up there at the top of the list. And the majority of our forest lands do lie within these five state forests, but we also have additional acres and some more scattered tracts, mostly in western Oregon. This display shows the location of those state forests that I just listed, as well as the more scattered ownerships. And you can see from this display that the majority of the lands we manage are located on the north coast, and specifically they're located in the Clatsop and Tillamook State Forests. Clatsop State Forest is about 140,000 acres of that land, and the Tillamook Forest is about 360,000 acres. I think it's important to note that the department manages two different types of state forest land. We manage common school forest lands. These are lands that came to the state from the federal government at statehood through the Federal Admissions Act. And ODF manages these lands under a contract with the State Land Board. And the largest block of these lands is the Elliott State Forest on the south coast in Coos and Douglas counties. There are about 8,000 acres of common school forest lands intermixed with Board of Forestry lands in the Clatsop and Tillamook State Forests. But the Board of Forestry lands do comprise the largest percentage of forest lands we manage, and about 657,000 acres total. Over 500,000 acres of that lies within the Clatsop and Tillamook Forest, though, so that's where the bulk of it is. A little bit on the history of the Board of Forestry lands. Most of these lands originated in private ownership in the early parts of the 20th century and before. Some were logged over earlier in the 20th century before the major fires of the Tillamook, but it was those fires that burned in the 30s and 40s that burned over most of these lands on the north coast that we now manage. And the Tillamook fires of 1933, 39, and 45 were the largest of those fires, and collectively, they burned over 350,000 acres. Some burned several times. and the result of economic conditions at the time, and the fact that the lands were essentially considered worthless by the private landowners once the salvage had occurred. Most of these lands reverted to county ownership through tax foreclosure, and the result was a tremendous economic burden on the counties at the time. And that photo shows what some of those lands looked like a few years after the last fire. As a result of the situation with the burned over lands reverting to the counties, a series of legal mechanisms were developed that allowed the counties to deed these lands over to the state to be managed for the benefit of the counties in the future. And in fact, several hundred thousand acres were transferred under these legal mechanisms starting in the 1940s and continuing up into the early 70s. And Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 530, codifies that mandate for management and also the revenue sharing arrangement with the counties. It also specifies that the lands be managed to achieve the greatest permanent value to the citizens of Oregon. And it is Chapter 530 that the two bills before you seek to amend. In more recent years, the Board of Forestry adopted administrative rules to define the term greatest permanent value, and I'll describe that in a moment. One final note is that there's been at least one significant court case involving the lands and the county's interest in them, that being the Crabtree, what's known as the Crabtree case in the 80s, whereby the Oregon Supreme Court did establish the county's recognizable protected interest in the lands. And you'll hear more about that, I think, in later testimony. The administrative rule on greatest permanent value further defines that term and includes several specific elements that the board laid out in that rule. And it basically calls for us to develop forest management plans that achieve some specific resource objectives. And the first one listed in the rule is sustainable and predictable production of forest products that generate revenues, of course designed to honor the fiduciary responsibility to the beneficiaries. But the rule also calls for plans that concurrently provide for properly functioning aquatic habitats for salmonids and native species, or excuse me, aquatic species. It calls for plans that provide habitat for all native species, and we have over 200 terrestrial species on the North Coast forests. Calls for providing for productive soil, clean air and water. And it calls for providing for diverse recreational opportunities. And clearly, these elements of greatest permanent value taken together do constitute a mandate for multiple resource management from these forest lands. That same administrative rule also provides some direction for how the lands are to be managed. And the three kind of key terms in the rule are active management, integrated management, and then plans that stress compatibility of uses over time and across the landscape, which, of course, is in sync with the multiple resource mandate. So it was this rule that we used to develop and finalize our Northwest Oregon State Forest Management Plan, and I'd like to kind of switch now and focus on that for a little bit and explain the process and the overall management approach involved with that forest management plan. The scope of the Northwest Oregon State Forest Management Plan is approximately 615,000 acres of state forests. These lands are actually spread across 10 forest trust land counties, ranging from Lane County on the south to Clatsop and Columbia counties on the north. And it includes the two forests that are the subject of the bills before you, the Clatsop and the Tillamook. And these two forests are wholly located in four counties, Clatsop, Columbia, Tillamook, and Washington. In terms of what the forests look like today, there are a variety of ages out there, but largely the forests are 40 to 60-year-old stands, result of the fires of the 30s and 40s, and are primarily the handmade forests, as we refer to them, that were created through the rehabilitation and regeneration projects after the fires. There's very little, if any, true old-growth stands. We do have remnant old-growth trees and some collections of trees, and a small percentage of older stands that regenerated following either the early 20th century logging or some earlier fires that took place in the area. and that constitutes about 5% of the area of those two forests. I think, as many of you are aware, the rivers of the Coast Range that flow out of the Clatsop and the Tillamook do support some of the best salmon runs that remain on the coast, and this includes coho, chinook, chum, steelhead, and also cutthroat trout. So all five of those species are present on the forests. And they are what we refer to as near urban forests, very close proximity to the Portland metro area, and have long been a playground for folks seeking to recreate in the forest. And we've seen the use steadily increase in the past 10 to 12 years as better facilities have been established, particularly in the Tillamook, where we first started to focus on recreation management. In terms of silviculture or management history, really the lands have been actively managed with forest management activities since the state acquired them from the counties. Up until the early 80s, that was mostly activity in the non-burned portions of the two forests. But over the last 20 years, starting in 1981, we've seen more and more commercial opportunities for thinning particularly in the Tillamook Forest. And since that time, those types of operations have increased pretty steadily as markets have allowed for the small wood that's associated with them. And with the exception of a period in the early 90s, harvest levels and revenues have generally been increasing over time. And of course, the future potential for harvest and revenue from a healthy forest the size of the Tillamook and Clatsop is considerably higher than is currently being realized. I mentioned recreation earlier. The Tillamook Forest has a pretty active facility development and management program and has since the mid-1990s. And this was an outgrowth of a comprehensive recreation plan that was adopted by the Parks and Recreation Commission and the Board of Forestry in 1993. And a similar plan was developed and approved for the Clatsop State Forest in the year 2000. And then also in the year 2000, we updated the action plan for the Tillamook Recreation Plan. The first action plan had been for a six-year period and had largely been accomplished. And so we're now operating under a 10-year action plan adopted in the year 2000. In terms of the planning process itself, the planning process started late in 1994 and went on over about a 6 to 7 year period. We had an interagency planning team. I think we actually had 10 different state agencies contribute at one point or another, but it was largely staff from the Oregon Department of Forestry and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that staffed the core planning team. Public involvement took a variety of forms, and I'll elaborate on that in just a moment. We had several academic reviews and scientific reviews along the way at particular points. And the final plan for Northwest Oregon State Forest was adopted by the Board of Forestry through administrative rule process in January of 2001. And the following month, the State Land Board approved that plan for implementation on common school forest lands in the area, in the planning area. In terms of a little more detail on the public involvement that took place along the way, I said it took a variety of forms, and some of them are listed here. We had two different advisory groups in place at different points in the process, and actually have now created a third for implementation of the plan. Public comments were allowed or provided for on numerous drafts. I think we had five or six different public comment periods on partial plans up into the final draft plan. And the plan and its various drafts were also brought before the Board of Forestry on numerous occasions, both at meetings and on at least two Board of Forestry tours along the way. Our Forest Trustland Advisory Committee, which is comprised of county commissioners from the Forest Trustland counties, also was briefed and participated regularly along the way. In addition, two commissioners from that group participated as members of our internal agency steering committee that provided oversight to the planning team. We had a series of public meetings at each point in the process where we had a product to share, and in all we had over 40 meetings and tours conducted over the course of the planning process. The final set of public meetings and input took the form of formal public hearings under administrative rulemaking process, and we had five of those at locations around the northwest portion of the state. A little more detail on the academic and scientific review side. early on, as we first developed the kind of the key silvicultural and biological concepts in the plan, we coordinated a group of 10 academics and researchers, and these were folks largely whose writings and work we had relied on to develop our approaches for management under the plan. That included folks like Chad Oliver and Jerry Franklin from University of Washington, Malcolm Hunter from University of Maine, John Papiner of OSU, and several other academics in the field of silviculture and wildlife biology. And we used that information to improve our drafts and incorporate more detail into them. The broader concepts and strategies were also the subject of an independent scientific review. And actually, that review also looked at some proposed HCP strategies, or habitat conservation plan strategies, that we had been developing. And that was what we referred to as an arm's length review, coordinated by Oregon State University, and had 27 scientists representing a variety of disciplines participate. And then the third group that actually took a fairly close look at our plan was the independent multidisciplinary science team that was formed under the Oregon plan, chaired by Logan Norris. And they reviewed and commented on our plan as part of their report on Western Oregon forest practices and salmon issues under the Oregon plan. And then lastly, we did convene a subgroup of that body to seek some specific advice and recommendations relative to anchor habitat strategies for salmonids. So those different reviews and took place along the way. Briefly, the overall approach in our forest management plan and we came up with this term, structure-based management, to describe it. And we did that to distinguish it from age-based management or rotation-based management. And that's our overall approach to integrated management that we have developed and are implementing in this plan. And it was our intent that it be designed to achieve management goals for several key resources through integrated activities. And these key resources were the timber and revenue, products and revenue, the habitats, both for fish and for terrestrial wildlife species, and overall forest health or diversity. And we have kind of four key concepts embedded in it, and the first one is shown on this slide, and that is to actively manage the forest stands we have today to create a more diverse array of stand types, and an array that more closely emulates what was out there historically and more closely emulates the array of habitats that were there historically. And we say emulate because the historic condition was wide and variable, and depending on what point in time you want to look at it, it could be quite different from another point in time. The other three concepts embedded in it are, one, to as we manage for this array of stand types at the landscape level, we're always trying to manage for some particular structural components within stands, and these are things like snags, down wood, and residual green trees, and important elements for habitat for a number of species. And another key concept is the idea that our resource professionals and those of our other agencies that we work with on the ground make the assessments of what is the current condition of stands or habitat, define what the desired future condition needs to look like on the landscape, and determine the appropriate mix of management activities that will move us in that direction. And then finally, the last key concept, and I think this would apply to any approach to forest management, success relies on monitoring and a system for responding to new information and making needed changes along the way as the plan is implemented, and a concept commonly referred to as adaptive management. This slide shows in graphic form, it's an oversimplification, but shows the five stand types that we've identified as sort of to base our targets on for the desired future condition. And I always like to point out that things aren't as neat as this in the real world. And in fact, stands develop along a continuum, and there are many variations in between, and not all stands would go through all these stages in a natural progression. And so in reality, the developing forest has a variety of other conditions. But we think broadly these descriptions cover the array of forest conditions that represent habitat for most native species. And the targets are designed to be met in the future at the landscape level in each district. I said that natural forests do go through a progression. They may not go through all these stages, and depending on the nature and scale of disturbances that occur, a stand may go through all those stages and in, say, 200 years could reach old growth conditions. But indeed, many stands will never get there. And the plan that we've proposed and are implementing does not propose to manage specifically for old growth stands, but our managed context for that is what we call our older forest stands, older forest structure stands. And we believe that we can achieve the characteristics in those stands in 80 to 130 years, depending on the site and the starting point with species and then the activities that occur along the way. I would point out that there are many areas where they probably will continue to develop and turn into old growth type stands because we won't be doing any management after they reach that older forest condition. Kind of a final point about the process for the plan. As part of completing our work on the plan in the year 2000, we conducted a modeling analysis effort where we tried to compare alternative approaches that had been discussed or proposed. Two of the approaches we modeled were very similar to the management approaches proposed in the two bills before you. We did model what we would refer to as a net present value emphasis, an emphasis on maximizing economic return. And our short rotation approach was based on a 45-year minimum harvest age, which, of course, is different than the 40 years proposed in Senate Bill 699. We also modeled a 50% reserve alternative. And by my interpretation of Senate Bill 430, I think it's very, very close to what's proposed in that bill. And then, in addition, we modeled a number of variations on these three basic approaches, including our proposed approach. So that's a little overview of the process and the plan. I'll summarize now with a few points, if I may, in closing. And one is a point about forest planning processes. And I think we recognized early on in the process as we started it that most forest planning processes up to that point had been characterized by trade-offs, either what I refer to as the either-or paradigm or context, and a kind of a scarcity mentality that resources are scarce out there, so to maximize one means foregoing outputs from another. And it really is a focus on competition and incompatibility. And we'd seen that, I think, in the federal planning processes that we had watched along the way. And the emphasis, I said, of maximizing one resource means you can't have another. And we tried to focus on a different paradigm, frankly, in developing this plan and keep that in the front of our minds. And that I refer to as the and-to-and concept, as opposed to either-or, where there's more of an abundance mentality and the assumption that integrated management can achieve high levels of several key resource outputs on a landscape of that size. And that with integrated management, resource management can be compatible between resources over time and space. So that was really our focus as we went along. In terms of the process itself, I believe it was rigorous and it was very thorough and inclusive. I believe it included a strong consideration and incorporation of the best available science. Science doesn't decide how to manage. I believe science informs how we manage, and I think we were informed by it. And it included an honest attempt to balance competing public interests and desires and the clear fiduciary responsibility to the beneficiaries, both the counties and the Common School Fund. And lastly, I'd like to point out that we've just started implementing this plan. And forest management is a very long-term business, and we can't really expect to see quick results from our actions on the ground. We do believe it is a plan that deserves to be fully implemented and fully tested through monitoring and adaptive management. And I think it should be tested right alongside the approaches that are in the two bills before you, approaches which are being implemented on millions of acres of private and federal forest land in Oregon today. And the true results of all of these approaches and their success in meeting their objectives really won't be known for many decades in the future. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to provide this information this morning. We look forward to answering any questions and also to providing any additional information the committee may need as it discusses these two bills. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ross. I appreciate your coming. I'm going to ask if you folks step back for a minute. There is so much that we're trying to get done. I don't know if we'll do many questions for a while yet. We're going to continue to try to get some background. I'm going to ask Janet McClendon and Howard Sohn and Hal Sawwasser, former and present chairs of the Board of Forestry, and Hal is the Oregon State University College of Forestry dean. While all of you are moving around, I want to wish Senator Fisher a happy birthday this morning.
Thank you, sir.
I know that Senator Fisher knows this, but there's only two days each year when I can give him a hard time about being a full decade older than I am. The rest of the time, you're only 9 years ahead of me, but these are the 2 days I celebrate, you see. We're glad you're here this morning, and hope that I know that Senator Beyer is away today. I don't know about Senator Corcoran, except that last week was his mother's birthday, and he took off a day, and we haven't seen him since Thursday, so I don't know where he is. Anyway, I want to welcome you this morning to our hearing, and what we're trying to do is cover as much territory as we can, so let's keep it as focused as we can. And again, I'm reminding people there is room down in room 50 if anybody wants to go down. I noticed that the police escorted a few people out because the back of the room got too crowded. So if you feel the need for space, head down to room 50. Janet, do you want to start?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and Senator Fisher. For the record, my name is Janet McLennan, and I reside in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a retired attorney. My association with the subject goes back a long way, particularly I served as staff director and counsel for the Joint Interim Committee on Natural Resources in 1973-74 in the Oregon Legislature, and then I worked as a natural resources advisor to Governor Straub. More recently, I was appointed to the Board of Forestry in 1987 and served until 1995, six of those years as chair of the board. Currently, I am a chair of a nonprofit foundation, the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust. The history of the state's relationship with these lands goes back nearly three quarters of a century to 1931, when the legislature first adopted some legislation that permitted the transfer of these lands to the counties. That legislation was not very effective, and little land was transferred. And then the 1930s saw the period of the Great Depression. I'm probably one of the few people in this room who really remembers the Great Depression, but it was a time of great hardship, desperation, and that was magnified with respect to the lands in the Tillamook and Clatsop areas by the Great Fires of 1933 and 1939. By the late 30s, 1.4 million acres, that's 15% of the private forest land in Oregon, had reverted to county ownership for failure to pay taxes. And this was a terrible hardship to the counties, not only because they were not deriving tax revenue themselves, but because the state at that time levied a property tax. And the counties had an obligation to pay the property tax on that 1.4 million acres. In 1939, a more practical and effective bill was enacted by the legislature to permit the transfer of lands from the counties to the state, with the proviso that the counties would derive present and future revenue from those lands in a consideration of deeding them over to the state. through the years, various standards for acquisition and management of the land were enacted by the legislature. In 1931, the idea was continuous forest production and the promotion of sustained yield forest management. The 1939 Act authorized acquisition chiefly for the production of forest crops, watershed protection and development, erosion control, grazing, recreation, and forest administration. In 1941, an important amendment was added, indicating that these were to be considered resources of statewide concern. And the board was directed to manage them for the greatest permanent value to the state. Pursuant to these pieces of legislation, in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, as Ross has indicated, approximately 640 acres were deeded over from the counties, and these were known as the Board of Forestry Lands. And various policy statements were enacted either by the legislature or by the board relative to multiple use of the lands. In 1967, the legislature expanded the uses basically to encompass all uses. It specified fish and wildlife, environment, landscape effect, and other uses, and those that had been previously instanced in the legislation. But it provided only the qualifier or restriction that the use not be detrimental to the best interests of the state. The 1970s, of course, saw great environmental awareness in Oregon, and the Board of Forestry began to be criticized, alleging that it was controlled by the industry. In those days, it was a portfolio board, and it was heavily representing the forest products industry. In the 70s as well, in 1979 specifically, the legislature enacted authorization to trade Board of Forestry lands for private lands for the purpose of establishing a state park in Crabtree Valley. And this effort failed when the counties brought suit, and after a sequence of court adjudications, the Supreme Court finally ruled that the Board of Forestry could not trade away these lands because the counties were entitled and had a protected, recognizable interest in revenue from the lands. As we go on, concern persisted and festered about the composition of the board, and in 1987, the legislature reconstituted the board into a seven-person public board, and I was then appointed along with six others. And the legislation specified that no more than three of those persons could be employed or derive revenue from the forest products industry, and that all were directed by statute to represent the public interest. That public interest standard tended to inform our deliberations, and we initiated a practice in the Board of Forestry of making all decisions by consensus, and that's persisted until this day. The board's mandate in the statute is to develop forest policy, and that had been done with something called the Forestry Programs for Oregon. The first one was adopted in 1977, and the second in 83. Both those dealt almost exclusively with timber supply. But with the so-called new Board of Forestry, those seven of us who had just been appointed, by 1990, we developed the forestry program for Oregon with a much expanded view of the forest. And we included protection of the forest land base and encouragement of fish and wildlife, scenic values, other forest uses, urban forestry, public involvement, and education among the goals of the forestry program. In 1995, we further expanded these goals, to create goals respecting research and monitoring, adaptive management, the achievement of healthy, sustainable ecosystems and biological diversity, and the support, continuing support for sustainable economies and communities. These documents, the Forestry Program for Oregon, have guided the board's and the department's management and their planning process. Many of the themes that Ross emphasized are themes that you will find in these forestry programs for Oregon. During the 90s, a planning process, as Ross has indicated, began relative to all of state forests. And in 1993 and 1994, a conflict arose about a timber sale in the Cascade foothills. And that was eventually the subject of dispute resolution mediation. The department agreed in that mediation to enter into rulemaking with respect to long-range planning and the greatest permanent value interpretation. At the same time, or close following, a number of the counties had become concerned about revenues and how the state forests were being managed. They also, in 1995, were extremely concerned about two measures that had been introduced at the request of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, which would have taken the revenues from sale of timber on the Tillamook State Forest and put it in the Common School Fund. The legislature didn't enact any of the bills before it on forestry that session, but it did add a budget note, and it directed forestry to work with the trust land counties to examine how to increase the predictability, sustainability, certainty of revenues. The task force was appointed to develop that policy, to develop a statement with respect to the purpose of the lands and the relationship between the counties and the state. We sought at that time diligently to develop something that would be legally defensible, a draft interpretive rule to evidence the understanding that the counties had when they deeded the land over and the state had in receiving the lands, and to describe the relationship, as well as interpret the statutory language. That a revised purpose of the land draft, plus planning and plan classification rules, together with a sustainability rule that our board had earlier adopted, were combined, and they have become the greatest permanent value rule. As you can see, this quest for management standards and the best way to to assure good management of these forest lands has persisted over nearly three quarters of a century. What we have, I think, in the greatest permanent value rule is a foundation for more forest management plans and for the management, continuing management of the forest as we go. It does integrate and balance economic, social, and economic values as the legislature and others have sought over the years. It does, in my judgment, assure good management for the benefit of all the resources of the forest. I believe that Senate Bill 430 and 699 failed to achieve that same balance, and that neither proposal would assure good management for all forest resources. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you, and I'll answer any questions or help you any other way I can.
Janet, I want to thank you for your testimony. You have kind of a perspective and comprehensive background, historical perspective, that very few have on the issue. Thank you for your testimony. Howard, give you a chance to hold forth for a few minutes here.
Sure, I'm one of those who doesn't have the long history that Jim has. But I currently serve as chair of the Board of Forestry. I also chair the board of a family forest management company, Lubbock Timber Company, based in Roseburg. The Board of Forestry's responsibility is to serve the public interest, broadly defined, not special interests. Whether in its role as manager of state lands or in its role of ensuring good management on private lands. Public interest on state lands, the public interest on state lands, is most recently defined, broadly defined, in the greatest permanent value rule that Janet has referred to. The management plan for the Northwest Forest, now in its implementation stage, was developed consistent with the greatest permanent value rule and consistent with a commitment to sustainable forestry, meaning managing the forest in ways and harvesting at rates that maintain and enhance the value of the forest and values from the forest over time. Multiple values, including environmental, economic, and social values, the triumvirate we regularly refer to. Consistent management, consistent with the responsibilities to multiple stakeholders. The board must take and does take its responsibility to the counties as a major duty against the background of the history that Janet referred to. The board must safeguard environmental values, habitat values in this particularly important geographic region of Oregon. It must promote the economic and social contribution of these lands to communities and families in Oregon. And it must protect these forests from the threat of future fire and disease through active management using all the tools at our disposal. The board does not have the luxury or the right to give priority to a single value or a narrowly circumscribed set of values. The board hears constantly and loudly from those who say the plan cuts too many trees and from those who say the plan doesn't cut enough. And you have a bill from each of those constituencies in front of you. The board sought a management plan for these lands that took the long view. It projected out fully 200 years. And the board recognized that given the landscape's history, harvest, fire, reforestation, the forest does not provide all the values in proper balance now. It does not provide the habitat value or the harvest value it is biologically capable of. Hence the absurdity of using the 90s harvest level as a baseline, as the proponents of Bill 430 do. This is a forest in process. The board sought a management plan that met the greatest permanent value standard, and it looked, as Ross Holloway emphasized earlier, it looked to scientists, to forest economists. They provided projections of what the forest is capable of in habitat, in harvest volume, based on the best information they had available. The board based its plan on science, on admittedly the best available science, not on selective science like that referenced by those with a dominant value, and admittedly not on perfect information and knowledge, but on what we knew then and what we know now. The plan drew on experts that projected the capacity of the lands given their current condition and their inherent productive capability and the potential for enhancement through active management. The board committed to using the best science, the best knowledge, the best technology, the best management tools we have to get to legitimate goals of increased harvest, enhanced habitat, improved recreation, improved recreation, more fish, and more dollars. And to get there on a timetable supportable by the current state of knowledge, but committed to monitoring the results, and adapting to new information learned over this long span of time covered by the plan. that those who came to the board, as they have come to you, from viewpoints that prioritized rather than balanced the values, those looking for harvest and those looking for habitat, these same interests joined in the process of developing the plan. This was an inclusive process, one that involved many hours, days, and weeks of input and discussion. It has been and continues to be an open process, one that takes all values and priorities seriously, but in the end has to establish the value against the permanent value standard. It must establish the balance to the permanent value, the greatest permanent value standard. Sponsors of Bills 430 and 699 no doubt see their proposals as responsible, but they start with a bias toward a particular value or collection of values smaller than the whole set the board must seek to optimize. The board could not responsibly lean so heavily toward harvest as in 699, whatever rational argument may be made, or so heavily toward reserves or non-management as in 430, however reasonable that may appear to some for whom those values are primary. The board does not have the option to go the easy way, letting certain values dominate at the expense of others. It has the very difficult balancing responsibility. The board did not opt for the federal approach that favors reserves or the private ownership approach that optimizes harvest, but looked for another route on how to manage the entire landscape for the entire suite of values. A plan driven not by harvest targets or fish counts, but by the current condition of the lands and the commitment to maintaining a healthy and productive forest long term. A plan that manages the land and the capacity of the landscape, not just the trees, not just the fish, not just the owls. It is creating optimal conditions for those outputs over time that the plan strives for. It manages inputs, not just outputs, or managing inputs in order to get the optimum outputs, the outputs citizens, all citizens want. Yet because of its multi-values approach and responsiveness to reasonable input from advocates, the plan does have reserve-like areas, several categories referred to as special, requiring special management attention, including anchor salmon habitat areas, a concept supported by constructive environmental organizations. And because of the multi-values approach and responsiveness to input from advocates from yet another perspective, the plan does have expedited harvest of diseased trees, notably the Swiss needle cast disease prevalent in the forest. It is a balanced plan, not one that bows to one primary purpose over another. The Bill 430 proponents appear to believe that forest management, active management is incompatible with habitat values, hence their insistence on reserves or non-management of half of the forest. The Bill 699 proponents appear to believe that managing existing forest for habitat is incompatible with optimizing harvest and revenue, hence their case for an expedited cut it all in 40 years plan. The fundamental and driving belief of the board and department is that forest management, active forest management, is not only compatible with multiple values, but essential to optimizing each of them on this landscape over time. Does the management plan for state forests in Northwest Oregon harvest less than the forest could produce if short-term log outputs were the dominant priority? At the expense of other values? Yes, it does. Does the management plan protect or produce less habitat than if habitat creation were the dominant priority at the expense of other values? Yes. But if we give insufficient attention to habitat, we won't be allowed to harvest. And if we give insufficient attention to harvest, we won't be able to maintain and create habitat over time. Unless a public that wants balance sees it in practice, mandates will swing like a pendulum back and forth, resulting in bad management and undesirable outcomes from all perspectives. You can't manage forests You can't manage forests, a truly long-term resource, for what you or anybody wants right now. Only the long view works. Only the long view is responsible. Only the long view produces greatest permanent value for Oregon. That is what the management plan for Oregon's Northwest Forest does. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Howard. I don't think we had a copy of that.
I have copies.
Okay. We certainly would like to have copies for the committee. I want to say very clearly that I'm a firm believer that men and women of goodwill can disagree on issues, and I don't want to hear anybody in the audience disrespecting anybody else while we're having testimony. I always try to treat everybody with the utmost of courtesy and hope that you'll do the same. It sounds like we have a plan here that's managed to make everybody mad at one level or another, and I hope you'll please understand that. And with that, we'll see if the professor can add anything to the soup that we're making this morning.
Thank you, Chair
Shields. Al, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chair Shields and Senator Fisher. I'm Hal Salwasser, the Dean of the College of Forestry at Oregon State University. I want to describe for you the context within which the state forests sit in Oregon. Forestry in Oregon has evolved over recent decades from a rather extensive multiple-use approach to now encompass three major distinct strategies, each with a different intensity of management and each to sustain a different suite of expected outcomes and benefits. I'll call these reserve, wood production, and multi-resource strategies. These strategies are in use at both landscape and site-specific scales, and it is common to find one of the strategies embedded in the landscape of another. For example, the anchor habitats within the multi-resource strategy of the state forests, or streamside reserves within the production strategy commonly used on private forests. The plan that's currently in place for the Northwest State Forests of Oregon is very significant because it is an alternative to the landscape scale reserves that are currently used on federal forests. The federal forest strategy is an untested experiment, a suite of hypotheses about biological diversity values of no management. The alternative, it's also, the state forest plan is also an alternative to wood production at the landscape scale for those private owners who would choose to favor older forest values in addition to some wood production. It's a unique experiment in the state. The wood production experiment for high yield and high economic returns uses intensive forest management, and it's been underway for 3 to 4 decades. The experiment in federal forests in western Oregon is a static approach to a dynamic problem, and according to its chief architect, Jack Ward Thomas, it is an untested experiment to date. As it's currently being implemented, it is probably not economically or environmentally sustainable. The state forest plans are also an experiment, and they may be the only viable multi-resource strategy being tested in the state, given the inability of federal managers to implement and test their experimental plan. The economic and community implications of the state forest plan are pretty clear. They are, as Board Chair Howard Sohn has stated, they are better than federal forest reserves, and they're probably worse than wood production forests. The environmental implications are not as clear. The state forest plans appear to produce better fish and wildlife habitat values for hardwood and early growth related species, better than reserves or production forests, and they possibly could produce as good a habitat values as the Federal Reserve strategy does for old forest fish and wildlife. And that is the grand experiment and the grand question that needs to be tested in this state, so that the state can see whether there is a viable, balanced, multi-resource strategy for those who would choose not to have reserves or wood production as their predominant emphasis. Thank you.
Thank you. very much. You have comprehensive testimony. I'm afraid that you guys are going to give me about 3 days of homework to do between now and Wednesday. I've already indicated or given notice to Senator George and Senator Ringo that we won't hear their testimony this morning. They can start us up, fire us up, whatever they want to do on Wednesday morning when we continue. I want to very quickly try to move from this to hearing some public testimony from individuals that have come over 100 miles because I've got so many people. I'm going to try to have a pro voice, a con voice, although that's almost impossible because you've got two different bills. So some of you have come indicating that you're interested in being for or against Senate Bill 430, and that's what we'll kind of begin with pro and con, figuring that the pro on that is probably con in the other, you know. So we'll just go that direction. The other thing that I want to say is, you know, if you have time, please stick around for the whole conversation. You know, you come in and you make your statement, you wander off or leave the building, and you don't know what the rest of the people have said. I'm trying to find some balance. I mean, I know that it's an experiment that's been going on for about 7 years, getting everybody to talk to one another, and everybody's pretty fragmented, but out of this, maybe some good will occur. So unless, Senator Fisher, you have any questions for this panel right now, I'm going to ask us to move on. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks for their effort.
Yeah. Appreciate all the work that you've done. Like I said, you've got a lot of homework. Oh, I'm going to interrupt myself. I think maybe I should switch another. There are three people that have come close to 100 miles, I would assume, and I think I should hear from them, and that would be the county commissioners who've all driven up from Tillamook this morning. I know that's not quite 100, but they've taken a considerable chunk of their time, and if I want to be fair with people that are being paid for by public tax dollars, I ought to ask Tim Josie and Paul Hanneman and Chuck Herleman if they'd all come up. I want to give you the opportunity to speak briefly. Outline your concerns, and then we'll you're welcome to stay around as long as you can, but I realize you may have to head back down the highway getting back over there. Believe it or not, I have a master list, which we've pretty much already had to throw away, with four pages of people that want to testify in addition. So I'm just going to ask Tim if you'll start, and if the others want to add a little bit, that would be great. But let's head into it as quickly as we can.
Thank you, Senator Shields, and happy birthday, Senator Fisher. Last time I was in the building as a state representative, both of you were state representatives.
And we've had a lot of birthdays since, let me tell you.
And Senator Shields, I'm really delighted to see the fact that you're not wearing a tie or a jacket, and maybe one of these days I can get you to wear some blue jeans.
Hey, you're not around here enough. I wear them all the time.
But let me start by saying that I agree, Senator Shields, with your opening statement that Senate Bill 430 and Senate Bill 699 are bookends. And the trust counties view both of these bills as bookends, and we do not support either. We view the adopted forest management plan and the 10-year implementation plan as being the proper methodology or course of action for our state forest lands. A lot of what I've outlined in detail, I'm going to go over somewhat quickly because you've had some rather good testimony so far on some of these issues. The first one, my first item that I'd like to talk about is the bill directs a state forester to integrate non-consumptive uses. This is Senate Bill 430. It directs a state forester to integrate non-consumptive uses in 50% of the total area of each forest. Well, what the bill does is it is based on a concept called structure-based management. Structure-based management is designed to emulate an older forest system, not to copy exactly, but to emulate an older forest system. Now, in the plan, if we're allowed to move forward, we're going to achieve that in about 50 or 60 years. Now, it's important that you hear what I have to say next. If we leave the forest alone, remember, this is a thickly planted monoculture of Douglas fir, and if we leave it alone, it's going to take 200 to 300 years to get there if forest fire or disease doesn't get it first. That's what happens if you set 50% of it aside. 50% of it's not going to get there for 200 to 300 years. I would say that biologically, that is a bad idea. The management plan calls for clear cutting, but the levels will be in the range of 0.5% to 1% or less of the forest in any given year. The plan also has a nationally recognized independent science team. They said that this system would not only preserve existing species in peril, but also contribute to their recovery. And I think that that's important. This was peer reviewed by, I think 26 is the name that comes to my number that comes to my mind, but a large group of very well-known scientists looked at this plan and made suggested changes, which were incorporated, and then condoned the plan as being very environmentally responsible. The plan already protects. Now, this is for the Tillamook and Clatsop forests, which are altogether is 510,254 acres. The plan already protects 244,922 acres for non-consumptive uses in the Tillamook and Astoria and Forest Grove districts. Let me detail those. For riparian management areas, 72,063 acres would have no final harvest. An additional 116,884 acres would have a restricted harvest. Spotted owl habitat cluster areas calls for 47,062 acres having no final harvest. Marbled murrelet habitat area calls for 21,011 acres having no final harvest. Other restricted areas with no harvest, 26,233 acres. And then you heard about recreation areas, approximately 200 acres in the Tillamook and Forest Grove districts. That bill was passed in 1991 when I was a freshman. I spent work on that bill myself on the House Ag and Natural Resource Committee. In addition, 10,000 acres have various management restrictions designed to enhance recreational values. Then you heard about salmon anchor habitat. Now, quite frankly, this was an issue that concerned the Trust Counties. We view some of the most productive salmon anchor habitat areas as being, we look at some of the most productive salmon anchor habitats areas in Tillamook County as also areas that have been actively managed, where harvests have been occurring. Yet these areas still produced a remarkable number of fry, salmon fry. So we know that active harvest in those areas does not destroy or cause any sort of decline, as we can see, in salmon numbers in terms of fry. However, we did agree, and we worked with Oregon Trout to implement or incorporate salmon anchor habitat in the 10-year implementation plan. We've agreed to set these acres aside to protect our salmonids that are listed or in danger of being listed. The total restricted area, accounting for overlap and excluding salmon anchor habitat and recreation areas, is 48% of the total forest. Now, just to give you an example of what we haven't talked about, What we haven't talked about is the full biological potential of these forests, which is estimated to be 493 million board feet per year. If we were to push for the full biological potential, now, I'll say right up front, the Board of Forestry, even if we pushed, they would not allow that. But if we were to push for the full biological potential, this word, in other words, Senate Bill, I look at Senate Bill 699 as the private tree farm bill or the full biological potential. That's the other end of the bookshelf. That is, if we push for that, we would be getting, the trust counties would be getting an estimated $6,420,000 a year. Now, we didn't talk about that when we were working over the last 6 years with the Board of Forestry developing the Forest Management Plan or the Implementation Plan. We talked about things like spotted owl areas, salmonid areas, structure-based management, and those sort of things. The bill provides an annual timber harvest level of 113 million board feet per year, which is the average obtained between 1991 and 2001. Well, the problem is that that's a 28% reduction from the actual harvest of the last 4 years. And in fact, the harvest levels from 1991 to 96 were at a low point. Quite frankly, we feel that this bill steals from our heritage for no good reason. If the bill passes, the level of timber revenues going to the schools in Tillamook County and Clatsop counties will be greatly reduced. Now, folks, senators, I'm talking about your pocketbook, because the revenues that come into Tillamook County that are earmarked for schools are used as an offset. If we reduce harvest by setting 50% of this aside, it will not only hurt our people, it will hurt the people throughout the state of Oregon, because it will make your budget tougher. The bill redefines the greatest permanent rule, or the greatest permanent value rule. I toiled over even bringing this up this weekend when I was thinking about the bill. You've heard a little bit about it, but I think it is important. And the reason why it's important, because I think it's the most deceptive part of the bill, now that I realize what it does. The greatest permanent value rule really is the core of the forest management plan. It had to be developed first, before the forest management plan could be developed and adopted, which was in itself a six-year plan. If the greatest permanent value rule is amended, the forest management plan has to be redone. Another very extensive process. And what it does is it excludes provisions providing for sustainable timber harvest and revenues to the state, counties, and local taxing districts. Now, if there is one thing that one message I would like to leave you with, it is this. Developing or amending state forest policy is the role of the State Board of Forestry, not the legislature. If you mandate a harvest level, or if you mandate forest policy, and then what happens is you open the door for litigation, and a timber sale could be contested, and then as not meeting the intent of the law, which would be the greatest permanent value rule that is embodied in this. And then a timber sale could be stayed, and then we go right down the path that we have seen with our federal forest lands. Our federal forest lands, before the spotted owl was listed, and before the federal legislature got involved in harvest policy and harvest levels, was 4 billion board feet per year. Today, it's nearly zero. Now, what has that meant? Half of Oregon's 60,000 timber workers have left the industry. Half of those disappeared from the work rolls altogether. Of those remaining, half ended up in the service sector with lower paying jobs. Now, what has that meant for our frontier country or counties in rural Oregon? The average pay in Crook County is now $27,400 per year. In Washington County, it's $42,200 per year. That's the disparity that we've seen with our federal forest policy. I plead with you, do not go there. I won't talk about the history of the county trust lands. You've heard a lot about that, so I'll skip that. I will also not talk about what I won't go into a great deal about the Crabtree case. You heard a great deal about that, but I would like to read to you what the lower court said in the Crabtree case said. There is a trust relationship between the parties. As the managing agent in this joint venture or partnership of State of Oregon through the Forest Department has control over the assets contributed by both. The general managing partner in this position has a fiduciary responsibility to its partners, which are in the nature of a trustee obligation. And then the Oregon Supreme Court finally ruled by saying, in part, the county has a protected, recognizable interest that can be asserted against the state. The opinion also stated that the county was entitled to enforce its claim for its percentage of revenue. Clearly, trust lands are intended to be revenue-producing lands, not reserves, which Senate Bill 430 attempts to do. I urge this committee to honor the 7 years of work on the part of the state, the counties, and a broad spectrum of interest groups to develop and implement the existing forest management plan. This is the plan that holds the greatest promise for meeting the appropriate balance of economic, economical, and social outputs that these lands are capable of providing. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Paul Hanneman, for the record, Cloverdale, Oregon. Make my comments as quickly as I can here. They're on one page, and I hope to move very rapidly through those. For the record, I served in the Oregon House for 26 years, from 1965 to 1991, and chaired the House committee when the first Forest Practices Act was passed in Oregon. I believe it was the first in the nation. Senate Bill 430 is an attempt to deceive the public about management of our state forests. Senate Bill 430 and the Tillamook Rainforest Coalition want the people of Oregon to believe that setting aside 50% of the forest into non-consumptive uses will benefit our environment in the years to come. And at the same time, our timber jobs and Oregon's economy will not be jeopardized. Well, first, current laws and regulations already protect nearly a quarter of a million acres of the forest. Are the acres proposed by Senate Bill 430 different acres? If hunting, fishing, and domestic water uses are all consumptive uses, then are they exclusive? Are they excluded from 50% of the forest? And if so, which 50%? An email to rainforest sympathizers says, quote, this bill does not lock up the forest because it allows logging in areas that are prioritized for clean water, fish, and wildlife, end quote. What's that supposed to mean? Those are the acres we wanted to protect as far back as 71 when the first Forest Practices Act originally passed. And what about creating older forest structures for future generations? We assume that's a goal of 430. Yet the passive approaches in 430 are likely to delay production of older, more diverse forests by restricting management on lands where thinning produces faster growth and where Swiss needle cast infestations can be replaced with indigenous western hemlock, Sitka spruce, and western red cedar. If the goal is to preserve the survivor trees on the outer perimeter of the fires, then they're part of the 50%. Isn't the rest of the vast forest important also? Then Senate Bill 430 uses the 1990s as a harvest base and attempts to show how future revenues would be sustained. The Rainforest Coalition creates its greatest deceit when it uses the first decade in 50 years when any significant harvest occurred, and much of that was from pre-commercial thinning. Reliable new data indicates the forest is growing more than 300 million board feet of new timber every year, and that's where the economic and social benefits for future generations of Oregonians will come from. That's why the greatest permanent value rule was established. That's why we believe in a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits for the people of Oregon. Senate Bill 430 deceives Oregonians into believing our forest, somehow half of it, will be saved. Perhaps Senate Bill 430 is intended to save the Rainforest Coalition.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Chair, Senator Shields, and Senator Fisher, this is going to be a hard act to follow between these two because they've covered a lot of what is that I would like to have covered.
Well, I'll tell you what, just summarize what you might have.
But the one thing I would like to point out is that consistency, like the Board of Forestry, is very important of a good plan. The things that I am concerned about with the economic Rainforest Coalition's economic realities are that they talk about the 60,000 or 65,000 jobs that will be increased. There's 24,000 people in Tillamook County. There's Clatsop County. I believe it's about 40,000, 44, somewhere there. That's pretty hard to increase that amount of jobs when you have the population. So I could go into a lot of other details, but I really feel that the other two commissioners have covered the background very well. And I do thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you gentlemen coming. I want to say my sense of fairness at this point tells me that I ought to give most of what we've heard is testimony that's been negative on 430. There has been negative testimony also on 699. But since most of it's been directed at 430, I'd like to ask Sybil Ackerman and Dick Shooten, who happens to be another county commissioner, if they'd come up. Phil Rutter from Pacific University, and we'll see what happens after we get those three, okay? I still am committed to trying to get testimony from individuals who've come a long ways before I adjourn this morning. I might outline the two distinct possibilities. On Wednesday, when we convene again, hopefully we'll have all four senators here. So if you are able to come back, then you'll get a broader audience. On the other hand, if you have to testify today, I started this testimony by myself, or this hearing as a subcommittee, and it's still a subcommittee. So what I could do, I can stay here until 11 and take testimony this morning if I have to, even by myself. So you consider whether you want to have a chance to come back on Wednesday and speak to the whole committee or just myself if Senator Fisher has to leave. What's going on?
Interrupting the chair, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay. While that's happening, do you guys have a presentation in a certain order? Is that what you're doing?
Thank you, Chair, Senator Shields, and the rest of the committee. We do have an order, if that's okay with you.
Okay.
What we were thinking was Guido Rahr, who is the chair of the Tillamook Rainforest Coalition, would speak. Then I will speak on some key issues. And then Dick Scouten, Washington County Commissioner. And
well, my apologies for mispronouncing that, Dick.
All right.
And then Phil, right? Okay. Well, it's a good thing you got a county commissioner, because once I had three other county commissioners speaking, you had a trump card. I had to let you guys go next. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the chance to testify today. My name is Guido Rahr. I'm the chair of the Tillamook Rainforest Coalition. I'm going to go first, and then Sybil Ackerman, who is the conservation director of Audubon Society, will go Dick Scouten will go after that, and then Phil Reuter will go, who is an economics professor from Pacific University. I guess the order is a little bit unusual this morning. Normally, from what I understand, a bill is described and then it's rebutted, and I think we're kind of in a reverse order.
Let me be clear. I have two bills in front of me, not one. And we were using them as bookends. I began with the Department of Forestry because I wanted some background. I went from there to the county commissioners because I want to get those guys out of here and back to their counties to work and so on. I had no intention of, I mean, I could have brought the other bill, 699, forward and had people rebutting it, too. But,
okay.
You know, I'm just trying to get through this in as fair and expeditious a way as possible.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, I'm the chair of the Tillamook Coalition. I'm also a fifth-generation Oregonian who has many generations of involvement both in harvesting forests in northwest Oregon and in fishing in them and protecting them. And I've had many a beautiful day in the Tillamook region fishing in the Wilson and the Kilchis, as I know many of the people in this room have. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today about Senate Bill 430, a bill to balance natural resource development with the conservation of fish and wildlife and clean water in the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forest. Now, the Tillamook Rainforest Coalition is over 50 small businesses, conservation and fishing organizations, and other nonprofits. The members of the coalition represent over 100,000 Oregonians and growing who are concerned about the future of the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forest in northwest Oregon. This 800 square miles forest looks from there like a giant green oasis, and it's one of the largest continuous expanses of unfragmented rainforest south of Canada. Some of Oregon's most famous wild salmon rivers, the Trask and the Wilson and the Kilchis and the Nehalem, all flow from this forest, and it's home to an abundant fish and wildlife and a spectacular range of recreational opportunities and clean drinking water that hundreds of thousands of residents from Washington County to Vernonia depend on. I'm not going to describe, we've been through the history a few times already this morning, but the reason that we're here is not because we haven't been involved with the development of this plan over the last 10 years. We've been very involved, and we're very concerned. And we finally have realized that we need to step forward and propose some alternatives to the way the plan is going. The problem is that the state refuses to protect any watersheds in the Tillamook and Clatsop Forest from logging and road building. This morning's presentations were very articulate, and there was a lot of wonderful things said, and the plan is full of fantastic goals and concepts. When it comes down to it, the entire forest will be logged outside of the riparian areas over time. That's got a lot of people concerned, and they live very close to that forest and throughout Oregon. Now, the Oregon Board of Forestry recently approved a plan that will subject over 85% of that forest to logging and road building. The harvest is going to climb from 90 million board feet to over 190 million board feet a year. The impacts of dramatically increasing the logging and road building throughout the forest will be tremendous. Increased slides, sedimentation of spawning gravel, and flooding in the Tillamook Basin. Despite 10 years of requests from dozens of organizations and thousands of citizens, the Department of Forestry has refused to protect any watersheds from logging and road building, and not a single long-term reserve has been created for fish and wildlife. The concept of structure-based management is not the problem, the reason that we're here. It's the idea that no areas are being set aside for fish and wildlife. Within the last few years, proposals for the Tillamook and Clatsop Forest have ranged from creating a new state park to managing the forest on a 40-year rotation as a tree farm. We've brought a wide range of groups together to advance what we believe is a balanced approach that combines economic and environmental stewardship. 50% of the forest should be dedicated to the department's own structure-based management program, which all of us have participated in this development, and 50% managed primarily for clean water, fish, wildlife, and recreation. In the conservation areas, forest thinning would be done to improve forest health. I'd like to politely say that nobody's proposing reserves where you lock them up and throw away the key. We're all proposing active management on a forest that is a recovering forest. But the difference is we're saying let some of those trees grow forever and don't cut them down as soon as they get to be big enough. These thinning projects would pay for the removal of unneeded sediment dumping roads and in the process create family wage jobs and restoration. This is not an anti-logging proposal. we're actually proposing to increase harvest 26% from the 10-year average, from 89 million board feet to 112 million board feet a year. We believe that's a sustainable level. In addition, our goal is to have no negative impact on county budgets and state school funding. Why 50%? It's a balanced proposal. The science supports it. When you add priority areas for fish, terrestrial biological diversity, and clean water for Washington County and other areas, this proposal preserves the economic health of the communities of Northwest Oregon. The plan makes sense for Oregon. Our state is doubling its population every 50 years. And, you know, there's very few chances left to protect something so beautiful. It is literally in the backyard of Oregon's largest city. The fastest growing sectors of our economy in Northwest Oregon are retirement and tourism. The number one reason people move to Oregon is because of our quality of life. So I encourage you, please, to visualize where our state's going and what we want the future to look like in 50 years, in 100 years. Senate Bill 430 gives us the chance to balance the competing needs of economic growth and environmental stewardship, and we'd be very grateful for your support. Now I'd like to introduce the other members of the panel. Why don't we start with Sybil Ackerman?
Sybil, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Shields and members of the committee. I want to be as brief as possible because I also know that there are a bunch of folks in the room that also came from Tillamook County in support of this bill and of SB 430. I had three main points that I wanted to make just as facts, distinguishing facts. Point one, the proactive vision of SB 430 provides a balance to avoid conflict. The current forest management plan, which has been discussed, that's a very good basis, is a mix of competing uses on all parts of the forest. This means that right now logging can dominate over other uses anywhere. The 50-year proposal for desired future condition of older forests in that state forest, for example, expressly can be extended to longer based on economic reasons. So what we're trying to do first, point one, is that the 50% proposal is trying to avoid conflict that inevitably can arise when species protected by the Endangered Species Act are also in areas where logging is mandated by the current law. So SB 430, I think, can help avoid conflict, can stop the train wreck, can stop the lawsuits. Point two, SB 430 is different from the current state forest management plan because it does absolutely require, that half of the state forest have this first purpose of non-consumptive protection. Interestingly, the current state forest management plan also allows for half of the state forest to become complex forest in 50 years, what I mentioned before. And also, Tim Josie as well mentioned this active management piece. So here's the distinction. It's not a dramatic distinction. The distinction is that SB 430 requires that half of that forest have a primary purpose of restorative logging. ODF and others have done a lot of research about what that restorative logging means. It's out there. It's not a mystery. And what it does here is it says, okay, let's actually get there. Point three, SB 430 is not locking up half of the state forest. Logging is allowed in the entire state forest. The 50% earmarked for clean water, fish, and wildlife simply require that logging be for restorative purposes. And so what restorative purposes means, I think, is an important one. And as I mentioned before, it's something that's out there. There's provisions out there. What this does, it gives us guarantees that we don't currently have. It avoids conflict, and it helps us get one step further in the game. Thank you.
Thank you, Sybil. And now we get to listen to another county commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chair Shields and Senator Fisher. My name is Dick Scouten, and I'm a county commissioner in Washington County representing the Alloa, Beaverton, and Cooper Mountain area, representing roughly 115,000 people. I would respectfully say that what's really sort of the central focus here is not about bookends, and it's not about habitat versus cutting trees. What I would point to is if you take a look at the summary, some of the summary documents of the economics reality statement, it tells us that the economic analysis that's been done for the ODF plan is fundamentally flawed. It simply has overlooked a lot of crucial economic values and simply hasn't put value to them. And speaking as a member of the Washington County Board of Commissioners, we're not interested in flawed economic analysis. We have recently worked with the Westside Economic Alliance to put out a document which was I have left you with one copy as well as, of course, 20 pages of my own testimony, written testimony. But the copy that I've given you is called The Westside Economic Study of June 2002 by Joseph Courtright. Take a look at that material and take a look at the economic realities in the Tillamook and Clatsop Forest, which are prepared by economic professors Rutter and Powers. There are serious economic analysis flaws with the work that's been done by ODF. When we take a look at Washington County, one of the reasons why we have done this analysis or have commissioned folks to do this analysis that we're very interested in understanding why we have been very successful economically and what we need to do to sustain our economic success and the rest. And of course, we have now become one of the economic engines of the state, and so our success is also critical to the success of the state and its funding sources. Just give you a couple of small examples, or just a couple of quick thoughts, because I agree with you, you have a lot of homework to do. In fact, we all do, obviously. But when you take a look at the kind of funding priorities that have been set aside for tourism and for recreational type of facilities, we look at numbers like 16.2% of all of the resources are in Washington County are devoted to types of recreational facilities, etc. The numbers are 10.4% for non-timber objectives in Tillamook District and in Astoria. 1.1% of the expenditures is for non-timber objectives. When you take a look at the Westside economic analysis, one of the things that becomes very clear is that to attract and retain the kind of high-skilled, well-paying kind of people, the knowledge industry, which is really our future in Oregon, then one of the things that they need to look at and are the kind of things that are going to retain them and keep them here and attract more is livability and quality of life. And the Tillamook Forest could play a very critical role in doing that. There's tremendous assets there to help us attract and keep the kind of high-paying people that we want in this state. A lot of that kind of analysis has really been overlooked in the work thus, done thus far by ODF. So I very much call your attention to the Westside economic analysis work done by Mr. Courtright, as well as the analysis done by our two professors, because we're interested in serious type of economic analysis, not flawed ones. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Senator Shields and Senator Fisher. It is still morning. My name is Phil Reuter. I reside in Forest Grove, Oregon. I received my PhD in economics from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in 1994. I currently teach economics at Pacific University in Forest Grove. I served on the Forest Grove Focus Group on the draft implementation plans with Tom Power of the University of Montana. I authored the report Economic Realities in the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests, published earlier this year by the Tillamook Rand Coalition. The conclusion of our report, in short, is that protecting half the lands and forested reserves is better for the people of Oregon as a whole. The economics of this situation are fairly straightforward, though they may surprise some. Consider the plans. The Oregon Board of Forestry has proposed a dramatic increase in harvest volumes relative to historical levels, not just the 90s, but increases over the 80s levels, which were the highest in 40 years. The increase will lead to modest growth in jobs and income in local sectors directly involved in forest management, harvest, replanting, The overall effect on local jobs will be less than might expected, however, because timber markets face problems of oversupply and low prices. The oversupply of timber means that logs from local forests will displace log flows to local mills from more remote sources, but the impact on jobs and income in sawmills is expected to be fairly small. The alternative presented by SB 430, in contrast, calls for the creation of long-term reserves on half the land in order to protect wildlife habitat, water quality, and recreation. Half the forest would see timber harvest as per the current plans, and reserves would accommodate some thinning. Under the reserve plan, harvest volumes will exceed historical levels, but the increase in jobs and income in forest product sectors will be smaller than under the current plan. No surprise here. Intriguing, though, is the transformation of the economy of northwestern Oregon. Today, reserve areas produce enormous economic value. When ODF talks about economic, social, and environmental value, they generally mean timber values when they say economic values, but this is simply not the case. Not only do the reserve areas fuel fishing, tourism, and recreation industries, but they also protect water quality. Crucially, when located in close proximity to workplaces and homes, they can help attract the knowledge workers who are such vital economic assets in the economy, especially looking forward. As the Portland metro area doubles in size and doubles again, as it certainly will, nearby forest reserves that readily accommodate recreation could present an outstanding competitive advantage for the Portland area as both a place to live and as a destination for travel. The giant tree farms represented by the current plan are unlikely to be such a valuable asset over time. From an economic angle, then, managing half the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forest primarily for non-consumptive economic activities makes more sense. Given the shrinking share of the forest products industries in the economy of Northwest Oregon and the healthy growth in other manufacturing sectors, services, and elsewhere in the economy, the balanced management of the forest under SB 430 will more likely attain the legally required greatest permanent value of the forest for the citizens of Northwest Oregon and of the entire state. While I'm here today, I would like to address just one other important issue that has come up. It has been asserted that the state of Oregon is obligated through a trust arrangement to manage these state forests for the counties who once owned these lands. If this is a trust arrangement, it is a strange kind of a trust. Please indulge me in an analogy. Imagine that one of your family members, a cousin, inherits a burned hotel. Once magnificent, it is now a blackened heap. Not simply burned, but burned and scavenged repeatedly. Your cousin owes the family money. Your cousin agrees to give the wrecked and lien-ridden hotel to the family as a whole on the condition that the family will give him a percentage of the revenues from the hotel. The family accepts the hotel, but the costs of repair are far higher than anticipated, and the burnt hotel generates few revenues, so the family picks up the tab for an enormously expensive renovation. The cousin made virtually no contribution for decades, though later this cousin agreed to pay part of the expenses, and at that, with no interest and no adjustment for inflation. Now the hotel is restored partly to its old grandeur, and here is the cousin. The cousin now demands that the family put his needs first, and he even suggests legal action to take the hotel from the family. To my view, this analogy well describes the situation of many of these counties. The county is the cousin. It turned over their burned over lands, that's the hotel, to the state, that's the family as a whole. The county thus avoided state taxes it would owe on the lands if it kept the title. Then the state, the family as a whole, floated bonds and picked up numerous costs to rehabilitate the valuable forest. Many county payments came late and irregularly. Even today, Tillamook County pays back only the principal and only part of the state's contribution. Those repayments are not even indexed for inflation, and yet the county's expressed betrayal. In this strange trust, then, the trustee is expected to make enormous contributions into the account he or she administers for the beneficiary. More, the trustee must actually pay to create the assets for the beneficiary. The counties will be getting a great deal under the reserve plan. One example, and I'll close, the example of rehabilitation expenses and repayment in Tillamook County illustrate the point. After assuming control of lands that had a market value of zero at the time, the state of Oregon spent in 2002 dollars $59.6 million on forest rehabilitation between 49 and 75. In 2002 dollars again, the counties have paid back about $7.1 million, or 11.9%. That's about one-ninth of the expenses. If payment flows are discounted at the rate the Oregon Department of Forestry uses in its analysis of expected revenues and expenses, the county has paid back a mere 2.2%, about 1/45 of the rehabilitation expenses. This calculation does not include the assumption of tax liabilities by the state payments for management, fire suppression, and other expenses that the counties will not repay. In summary, forest managers are at a fork in the road. We have before us two competing visions in the current plan and in a reserve-based alternative. Two competing visions of economic prosperity. The Board of Forestry has taken steps to boost the cut to benefit an industry sure to contribute a dwindling share of income and jobs to the region and to the state. Alternatively, the Board of Forestry could maintain wood flows but create a natural jewel at the edge of a thriving metropolitan area and coastal communities that depend increasingly on attracting retirees and visitors. This distinctive gem promises to give Northwest Oregon an edge in the intense competition among regional areas to attract businesses and jobs for future economic prosperity. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate your testimony. Do we have a copy of that testimony?
Yes, I've marked it up some. Can I email it to the secretary? Or
please email it to us. Make sure the committee... I mean, I'm being deluged by such an onslaught of testimony. I thought maybe I couldn't find it. So you're saying we don't have a copy
not
presently.
Yet. I edited it this morning without my computer, so I'll
make sure that we get a copy of it.
Will do. Okay? Thank you very much.
Any questions? Thank you for your time. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
I want to say that...
Thank you for your criticism.
Oh, yeah. I do want to say to the people that have written me notes that they'd be happy to come back on Wednesday. God bless each one of you, because we will be calling people back on Wednesday. I also have had people say that they can't get off work on Wednesday and would like a chance to testify today, and I will work that into the scenario, and also try to get people that have come more than 100 miles. Having said that, I don't know which side of what the next person is, but I have a note from a Walt Socha. Could you come on up and testify for a couple minutes, please, and
one
give
page.
Us your testimony?
Okay. I have copies back there, and I'll leave one here, and I do have some references, too. Writing in support of 430, I'm doing this even though I'm a little concerned it doesn't go enough to protect our rainforest. And I'm a little schizoid on this whole thing because right now we're in the middle of a global war that's related to oil. And yet in the future, I really believe oil is going to be much less of an issue than the supply of fresh water. Again, I have references for this. In some parts of the world, water issues are actually more important than oil. Anecdotally, I just saw bottled water on sale for 99 cents a liter. I figure this to be $3.75 per gallon for bottled water. So this oil, gasoline, water thing is critical. Some boring facts, again, references. More than 97% of the world's water is salty and thus toxic to us. Of the remaining, most is locked up in glaciers and deep underground. I'll get local here in a minute. Only 0.1% of our world's water is accessible. Globally, 1.2 million people lack access to drinking water, 2.9 billion to adequate sanitation facilities. Now, getting here in Oregon, the average of family of five uses 300,000 gallons of fresh water annually. Now, I'm assuming this includes your domestic use and any industrial product or agricultural product that you'll be buying. Even with our reputation for rainfall, this state has seen contentious social and political issues which result from inadequate fresh water. And locally, in the next 50 years, the demand for water in the Tualatin Basin alone will require 16.3 billion more gallons of stored water annually. So what must be considered here, what I think must be considered here, is that Tillamook Rainforest is an incredible source of fresh water for personal use, agricultural, and industrial. I should also add that on a human time scale, it's a perpetual source. The effectiveness of this rainforest is due to its sponge-like functionality. It sucks up heavy rainfall and slowly releases it during the year. It creates its own weather, even allowing ocean fog to drift in and drip from the trees. Anecdotally, my wife and I took a trip several years back around the Olympic Peninsula. Driving through the forest, it was noticeably cool and damp. Breaking out into a clear cut, I just lost my place. The weather was dramatically hot and dry. Slipping back into the forest, we again experienced the cold and damp. Therefore, I fear that cutting the Tillamook will have several effects that will reduce the effectiveness as an incredible, valued, and permanent water resource. Cut forests will be hotter and drier. This is not a good condition. Runoff during the rains will increase. Less will be available during our sunny summer days. The water that is available will be more turbid and an expensive condition to fix. Oregon already has water issues. Any activity that decreases the, quote, greatest permanent value, unquote, of the Tillamook Rainforest in the face of future water shortages is irresponsible. As for the school funding, this really needs to be a separate issue. Reducing water for people, flora, fauna, agriculture, and industry is not an effective solution to our statewide school funding issue. My name is Walt. I'm in unincorporated Washington County, but my address has a Portland zip code. But I am not in Portland. Again, I have references at the bottom of this.
Thank you, Walt. Also had a note, I didn't realize I had five county commissioners in the room at one point in time, and this would be Mike Probst from, Polk County. I'm going to give him an opportunity to speak. I am going to try now to go pro and con, and Mike has listed himself as against Senate Bill 430. We've just heard from Walt, who's for it, so let's go with him. And I guess you have somebody with you today, is that right?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman.
And that would be Mark Rasmussen?
That's right, yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fisher, good to see you again. Yes, I am the chairman of the County Forest Trust Lands Advisory Committee, and Mark is working for our committee, and I am one of the counties that gave our hotel to the state. Unfortunately, I'm not one of the ones that kept their hotel. The ones that kept their hotel are very pleased now that they kept it. They're getting a lot more revenues by keeping their hotels. And unfortunately, the ones that kept it, their revenue returns are much higher than the ones that have the state managing it for them now. So that little presentation you got earlier, it was much better if you would have kept your motel back then, or hotel, on the returns. But Mark will be giving you a short presentation of where the state lands could be and where we had agreed to go with the state and kind of where we are right now. So, Mark, if you'd like to do that.
Thank you. My name is Mark Rasmussen. I'm a forest economist and principal at Mason, Bruce, and Gerard, a natural resources consulting firm in Portland. Our firm was founded in 1921 by David Mason, who was the first and perhaps loudest proponent of sustained yield forest management in the Pacific Northwest. The Forest Service, Weyerhaeuser, and many others bought into that idea, and we're very proud of our heritage. I've been working for the last couple of years for the Council for Forest Trustland Counties, helping them understand and work with through the implementation plan for the forest management plan. And I've been asked today to put the harvest levels of Senate Bill 430 into some kind of historical perspective. Gil, if you can put the first chart up there. Every 5 or 10 years, like all good forest managers, the Department of Forestry has prepared a plan for these lands. And what I've done here is graphed out the projected harvest levels for those plans over time. There's a couple things you can look at that jump out at you. Each plan projected that harvest levels would increase as the forest reached maturity. The differences between the plans have to do with changing assumptions about growth rates and management for specific portions of that land. The top line there at 493 million board feet is the potential theoretical maximum sustained yield level calculated in this last planning cycle. And what you can see here is that each plan in the past has projected harvest levels far below the potential, the biological potential. And I think we heard testimony from past and current Board of Forestry members about those kinds of reductions from the maximum yield. I think you can look at this graph and understand that the counties went into this current forest planning, this most recent forest planning process with an expectation that harvest levels would be pretty high. The last three forest plans had harvest levels somewhere in the nature of 320 to 350 million board feet. The heavy black line you see there is the current forest plan that was agreed to in December of 2000. That's the alternative 1C2. Now, what you can see there is that yet another set of reductions were made from past expectations in this current plan. Over time, over about a 100-year period, that's about 1.3 billion board feet of harvest that's been set aside, I guess, for new and additional non-consumptive uses in this recent planning process. Go to the next slide. The next slide shows where Senate Bill 430 fits in here. And as I prepare this and sit here now and listen to the description of what this plan would do, I'm not quite sure that harvest levels would be that high on this graph. This graph shows harvest levels for the three northwest districts, and the Tillamook, Forest Grove, and Astoria districts. And I believe that 113 million board feet that's talked about by the proponents of the Senate Bill 430 includes some of the counties to the south as well. So that might be an overstatement. Next slide, Bill. This last slide then tries to put this projected harvest level of Senate Bill 430 into some historical perspective. As you see, it's less harvest than has occurred over the last 4 years, and less harvest than was occurring at the late 80s. What you see in the mid or in the early 90s is the result of the spotted owl being listed Department was unable to sell as much timber as they had planned to because they had to sort of rearrange their sale program to take into account the spotted owl procedures. And they've sort of worked their way through that and now are able to sell more timber while protecting the spotted owl. Now, one thing I've been doing for the counties is trying to help them work through and understand the difference between the harvest levels promised in the forest plan and the harvest levels that the department is proposing for the next as it implements the plan. And there's a bit of a difference there. You can see that difference on this graph as the difference between recent harvest levels and alternative 1C2 at 279 million board feet. I think the reasons, for all the same reasons that the department is struggling to provide the harvest alluded to in the forest plan, you'd have the same set of problems getting to the 113 million board feet promised by Senate Bill 430. So in my view, what we see in Senate Bill 430 is even lower harvest levels. That's all I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think the real point that you've heard from the counties is we've worked very hard to give up a lot already, and we're really not willing to give up anymore. We've given up to biologically over 450 million board feet on these lands. So there's substantial revenues down to 279 million board feet, and we're at an implementation plan right now that is only implementing 195 million board feet, which is not acceptable to us. We're working on getting the implementation back up to the 179 million, which is what the forest plan had adopted, is somewhere in that range. And that's what is acceptable to the counties. That's what we agreed to through negotiations and compromise, which gives both the environmental standards that we think are acceptable and timber harvest levels that we think are acceptable. It's a compromise somewhere in between, basically somewhere just about in between both these bills. And it's somewhere in between the departments, pretty much in between both these bills. That's why I put down that I'm not supporting either one of these bills. It is somewhere in between, and I know both sides may not be happy with that, but the counties work very hard. If there's any legislation that comes out of this session, it should be to strengthen the county's positions, not to weaken it. Both these bills basically weaken the county's position. So if there was anything that we would be supporting, it is to support our position. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it very much. Those were essentially no positions. Somebody that's come over 100 miles was a pro, Bob Reese and Bill Steen. Could you folks come forward? Are you both here? We'll have testimony from two opponents. Jay Kostick, right? And Ron Larson next. So, gentlemen, welcome. Glad you're here this morning.
Thank you for having us. My name is Bob Reese. I'm a full-time fishing guide in Tillamook, Oregon. And one thing that really worries me this morning is a lot of folks have talked about what we may lose if we don't get the current proposed harvest in Tillamook State Forest. What has not been mentioned is what we have already lost in Tillamook County because of the current condition of the rainforest there. Tillamook County fisheries are currently in a state of critical status. For this reason, I cannot make my full-time living in my hometown because of fishery closures. In the last 10 years, the residents of Tillamook and whatever tourists we may still draw to the area have lost the right to retain wild coho, wild spring chinook, wild steelhead, wild chum salmon, and wild cutthroat trout. When anglers read in the regulations what they can't keep in Tillamook County, it's a wonder we get any visitors at all. Lost fish means lost revenue and lost heritage for Tillamook County. Where there was once a thriving charter fleet and commercial coho trollers fishing on ocean salmon from the port of Garibaldi, there are very few. Where there were once busy coastal rivers and towns in the month of March, this month, fishing for wild steelhead, we now have the Garibaldi crab races in an attempt to draw visitors. In places where school children out in the out of school for the summer would sell worms roadside to anglers that would come from Portland and far reaches of the state to fish for cutthroat trout. We don't have that fishery anymore. Tillamook County needs its wild fish back. With healthy returns of wild fish back to our forests, we can sustain our livelihoods full-time in Tillamook County. We recognize a lot of what the Oregon Department of Forestry has done for fish in our forests, but we think they can do more on these publicly owned lands. The Tillamook Rainforest Coalition's plan to increase buffer zones in these public forests will allow large trees to remain intact in our watersheds. This large wood will create pools shown necessary for the survival of wild coho, trap spawning gravel, grow insects that feed juvenile salmonids, and provide protection during times of flood in Tillamook. In addition, increased riparian areas will decrease sediment loads to low gradient streams. Some of the streams that I surveyed as an employee of ODF&W for these wild fish indicate that the sediment chokes out incubating eggs. It will allow an area that once thrived as a result of tremendous salmon runs to once again contribute to the economic health of our communities. The Tillamook Rainforest Coalition's plan to manage forests to grow older stands of trees will capture heavy precipitation, preventing damaging flooding, and retaining cool water for vital summer releases in a watershed that violates DEQ standards on every one of its five major watersheds. We feel the Tillamook State Forest watersheds are not operating at full biological potential for fish. And if we can't make a fair amount, if we can't manage a fair amount of these forests for fish, they never will. We already have a heavy investment in salmon hatcheries in Tillamook County. Due to loss of wild fish, Tillamook County has come to rely on these hatchery fish for economic benefit. As important as these hatchery fish are to my business, the wild fish of Tillamook are a much better investment. Tillamook fishing guides derive significantly more revenue from wild fish than hatchery fish, and these wild fish do not fall victim to the shortfall in the state's budget that our hatcheries do. Now, my job is not more important than a timber job, and a timber job is not more important than my job. The difference is we're not running out of timber, and the 50-50 plan supports both. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Bill Steen, and I represent concerned fishermen such as myself, and I just have a statement I'd like to read.
Where are you from?
Salem, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Dear Chair and Honorable Committee members, we represent some of the thousands of anglers that migrate to Tillamook County each spring, summer, fall, and winter to partake in a unique privilege and heritage that we know is vital to Tillamook's local economy. We fish, therefore we are. Recreational sport fishing has survived the ups and downs of salmon stocks, the El Ninos, and predators, the threatened budget cuts of hatcheries and degraded habitats. What we are most concerned about today is the proposed harvest of rates of one of the last temperate rainforests in the world that likely support hundreds of thousands of wild salmon, steelhead, and trout contained within its watersheds. These watersheds are home to some of our first experiences with outdoor recreation. Ocean fishing for coho, bay fishing for fall chinook to 50 pounds, wild cutthroat trout are all memories that we will never let go of. The Tillamook State Forest has grown these fish for us in watersheds that were devastated in the 1940s and the 1950s due to massive fires. These fish have seen some tough years, but most recently wild coho have rebounded to numbers that we haven't seen for 40 years. We recognize that Tillamook State Forest is growing into a pristine natural area that can sustain both sport fishing, wild stocks, and timber harvest for valuable jobs. We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars every year in Tillamook County and want to continue to have a return in our investment. Therefore, we support the Tillamook Rainforest Coalition Plan for a 50-50 split, managing 50% of the public forest, land, or timber harvest, and 50% of the public state forest for fish, wildlife, and clean water. This legislation will give wild fish the necessary buffer zones, which are currently only 25 feet, and the necessary habitat to sustain themselves and the Tillamook sport fishery that means so much to us. Currently, every river of the five major river sheds qualify for listing on DEQ's 404D list, which indicates water quality is not sustainable for fish habitat and human use. Water temperatures, dissolved oxygen, and bacteria levels are unacceptable, and the TRC's initiative has the opportunity to bring these rivers back into compliance. Please support HB 430, as it could be our last chance for healthy streams for wild fish in the Tillamook State Forest. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I've already announced that two people from Tillamook County are on my list next. That would be Jay Hossick and Ron Larson. They have both indicated that they are in the no position, so we've had two yeses and now two noes. Welcome to the committee, what's left of it. I ought to say that Senator Corcoran isn't being irresponsible this morning. He, I think, went to his mother's birthday. She's quite elderly. And he got stuck in an airport in Phoenix, Arizona. So that's where he is. And Senator Beyer told me he couldn't be here this morning. Hopefully everybody will be back on Wednesday. So those of you, again, bless you if you've said you'll wait till Wednesday. You will have, I hope, a full committee at that time. Let's continue with these gentlemen.
Okay. Senator Shields, thank you for being here. My name is Ron Larson. I'm a business person, engineer, surveyor, having lived in Tillamook County for the past 27 years. Living and working and raising a family in Tillamook County, working in Clatsop County, I think I have a unique perspective on what I bring to you here. Also, for the past 6 years, I have served on the board of the Neoconee School District, and this is my third year as chairman of the Neoconee School District. I would point out that the Neoconee School District is dependent upon timber dollars on our budget, and that is a fact. My three daughters have all graduated from Neoconee High School and are now productive citizens. For 15 years, the first 15 years of 27, I lived in the rural part of Tillamook County, adjoining forest lands, and for the past 12 years, I've lived in Wheeler, a small city in the north part of Tillamook County. I now live about a block and a half from forest lands. What I do as a surveyor and engineer is working within the public and the private. I have worked on water resources, consulted with most of the public and private water systems, storm drainage systems, master plans, erosion control, wetlands mitigation. In short, I'm an engineer that works in environmentally sensitive areas. In 1990, I had an opportunity to work directly in the middle of the Tillamook Forest on the Belding Creek washout adjacent to the Salmonberry River, reconstructing a railroad bridge in that area. I got to see firsthand of what happens in a very old part of the forest and what nature can do. From my perspective, the Forest Management Plan is an environmentally sound and sensitive plan. It's balanced and it works. It allows for habitat, wildlife, and clean water. It allows for timber resource management and it allows for jobs and families for those who live and work in Tillamook and Clatsop counties. From my perspective also, I've been able to play and spend weekends and evenings in the Tillamook Forest. It's incredibly amazing to watch a forest be replanted and grow again in almost the 3 decades that I've lived in Tillamook County. I have a first-hand personal knowledge of many of the public and private water systems in Tillamook County. And I can tell you right off the top of my head what those systems are. Many of them are groundwater systems, and I won't elaborate. Many of them are small systems. I think that this forest management plan will continue to support clean water for all of those. In 1990, personally, I had a 4.5-acre tract of land immediately adjacent to a forest land, and I had a surface water, drinking water. That was my entire water system. That was logged in 1990. I worked carefully and closely with the timber company. They worked with me. I worked also with the district state forester. I'm pleased to tell you that that water system is still fully functioning today, 10 years after logging occurred. The system does work. I believe it is possible to meet the competing interests with the existing forest management plan. Finally, as the chair of the board of the Neoconee School District, I can assure you that there are negative financial impacts of this bill to the Neoconee School District. And as a resident of Tillamook County, I can assure you that Tillamook County General Fund is adversely affected. But I can tell you that I think it is a balance, and I think that the balance that we have in the forest management plan is what we're looking for. I urge you to recognize the broad-based, long-term, visionary, and environmentally sensitive aspects and guarantees that are in the current state forest management plan. The passage of SB 430 will deny that broad-based, balanced plan for the benefit of other narrow interests. Thank you.
I'm just trying to keep all this straight. So far this morning, we've heard from people that, like 430, don't like the forest management plan, don't like 430, and don't like the present forest management plan. But you're in a position where you don't like 430, but you do like the forest management plan?
Correct.
That puts you in a different position than several that we've heard from, and I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Senator, my name is Jay Kosick. I'm the superintendent of the Neoconee School District. The Neoconee School District encompasses the North Coast communities of Bay City, Garibaldi, Rockaway Beach, Wheeler, Nehalem, and Manzanita. As I see the proposed legislation as it's written, the two key issues for me would be the proposed management plan, which sets aside 50% of the forests for non-consumptive uses, and the revenue sharing plan. And in my opinion, the management plan that was implemented in 2001 took six long years and a lot of hard work to develop. And it was developed by a vast array of people, environmentalists, forestry people, government officials, and others. And it provides for a sensible, it provides for a responsible forestry management plan. It provides for healthy forests, recreational areas, as well as sensible timber harvest and revenue sources for the county services as well as for schools. The proposed legislation in Senate Bill 450 would result in a management plan that would result in unhealthy forest practices, which could result in fire hazards and other things as that. Because the present management plan was developed with a broad base of support, it would appear that those presenting a new management plan would be a small group that are unhappy and trying to promote their own singular interests. To do away with the present plan would be, in my opinion, to dishonor the good work that's already been put in place by a significant number of people. The second issue, as I stated a minute ago, for me would be the revenue sharing proposed by Senate Bill 450. Currently, the trees that were planted after the Tillamook burn by the citizenry of Tillamook County are now ready to come online. Tillamook is a poor county, and there's a high degree of poverty, a high degree of unemployment, a high degree of people needing medical assistance who aren't even on the Oregon Health Plan, and there's a lot of homelessness. The forests coming online would provide the much-needed revenue for citizens of the needy citizenry of Tillamook County, and it would provide revenue to the Neoconee School District because we are dependent upon that timber revenue. Tillamook County has developed the forests, and Tillamook County citizens should receive at least some of the benefits from those forests. The proposed Senate Bill 430 would give an average revenue to Tillamook County over the past 10 years. That revenue would provide about 40% to 50% of the revenue that we now realize. And what that would mean for the Neoconee School District is, with that kind of reduced revenue of 40% to 50%, It means that we would have to look at cutting programs for students. We'd have to look at reducing teaching and support staff. And the big losers in this scenario would be the students, who are the future of Tillamook County and the future of our state. So, in summary, with a professional, common-sense forest management system already in place, why would the legislature replace it with a short-sighted plan that would also hurt the citizenry of one of the counties for which this bill is designed? I would ask you to vote no on Senate Bill 430. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here and talk to you today.
Ron, how long have you been the superintendent of the school district?
He's Jay, I'm Ron.
Excuse me.
Jay.
This is my second year.
Second year. I'm sorry, I can't keep everybody's name straight.
Okay.
But you are the superintendent?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I am the board chair.
And you're the board chair. So you've been there a couple years. Where'd you come from?
I was in the Mooloolah River School District before I came to the North Coast.
Okay. So you have a sense of the issue prior to your arrival there.
Yeah. I do, in fact. In fact, Senator Beyer is also from Mooloolah.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm sorry he can't be here this morning. I'm sure he would have greeted you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I do appreciate your unique perspectives this morning. A couple people that have come over 100 miles that indicate that they're four, and that's where we are now, Troy Horton and Jeffrey Birmingham. And I'd like both of them to come.
Jeffrey Birmingham, defer his comments to Wednesday.
Sure. I'd be glad to have you. Like I said, anybody that's willing to come on Wednesday, bless you. So we'll hear from you on Wednesday. Is there another yes that we can get to come up while we're at it here? Go ahead and start, and we'll get another momentarily. And your name, sir?
My name is Troy Horton.
Okay, thank you
for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm the chair of the Long Range Planning Committee for Fishhawk Lake Association. That's a picture of our lake there. Our community is nestled in the Coast Range above Birkenfeld, Oregon. That's about 30 miles east of Astoria.
So this lake is roughly 30 miles east of Astoria?
Yeah. Being a country boy in a room with this many suits is a little intimidating.
That's why I didn't wear a necktie today.
I appreciate that. But I did have some things that I thought were important to say. About 41% of Fishhawk Lake's watershed is Oregon Department of Forestry land. There's about 5,000 acres above us that would be affected by this bill. We have about 150 homes around Fishhawk Lake with another 100 lots that can be developed. I'd like to describe to you some of the ways that SB 430 would affect us. First is the current condition of state land in our watershed. State land represents about 41% of the watershed flowing into Fishhawk Lake and 35% of the watershed that supplies our drinking water. Of the state land in our watershed, 17% has been clear cut within the last 15 years. Over the next decade, another 7% is slated to be clear cut, and 59% to 70% is planned for partial cutting. Another 6 to 7 miles of new road construction is estimated. Clear cuts and road building are major contributors to siltation of streams in our watershed and Fishhawk Lake. This causes many problems to our community, including removal of siltation that settles in the lake, effects on the quality of our drinking water, siltation of fish habitat, weeds, and recreational values. Logging activities also have detrimental ramifications such as damage to roads because of logging truck travel and safety issues. I'd like to go into these issues in just a little more detail. Some assumptions that we've made are the following. 41% of our lake's watershed is state land. 35% of our drinking watershed is also state land. The amount of siltation that comes into Fishhawk Lake is 4 times the amount that would be expected without logging and road building activities. This comes from a coordinated resource management plan that was done in our community quite a while ago that tried to estimate our watershed. since one quarter of the siltation coming from state lands would still normally be present, even if the logging wasn't occurring, we're going to assume that three quarters of the siltation that comes off of state lands would be eliminated if 430 passed. And this, you know, I'm really here talking about a real community and how this affects us on an economic basis. Siltation of the lake, with current projections, we average about $80,000 a year that we are budgeting for dredging operations, maintenance, and spoils removal. So if 31% of that siltation is coming from state lands in addition to what would normally be expected, that means we spend $25,000 per year due to siltation from Oregon Department of Forestry land and their practices. Water quality. Less siltation will cause less wear and tear on our water plant filters. This will mean a longer life for our equipment. Annual reserves for water plant filter replacement is about $4,800. 26% of that. It's a smaller percent because part of the watershed doesn't affect our water supply, but it does still go into the lake. That would be $1,200 per year cost. Less logging would also mean fewer chemicals in our watershed and safer, better quality water. What is that worth? Siltation of fish habitat. Siltation from Oregon Department of Forestry lands affects Fishhawk Creek. Less siltation and cooler water will result in better habitat for salmon. We are currently considered a core coho salmon area for the Nehalem River. Please help our state's fisheries industry. And we heard a couple folks talk about that. Weeds. In a report prepared by KCM, which is a lake quality company, they said that long-term reduction in weeds requires the removal of nutrient-rich sediment that supports the growth or deepening the lake to a point that limits light, which would affect the growth. This highlights two points where reducing siltation will help our community. Over less time, less silt will allow us to lower our lake bottom. Less silt will supply less nutrients that help the weeds. We currently estimate weed removal at about $9,000 per year. 31% of that, due to the sediment coming in from state lands, would be $2,800 per year in reduction in costs. Recreational value. Older forests, cleaner streams, less log traffic. What are the values of those? Roads. Less potholes. Our roads, they continually come and fill potholes because these huge logging trucks just tear them up. That's also very hard on our cars, wear and tear on tires and cars. That would lower expenses and repairs. Safety. Greater safety if there are less log trucks on the roads. Better quality roads are also safer to drive on. Increased property values. All of the above will lead to lower dues that all of us pay in our community, better quality of life, etc. This will make our community even more attractive and increase home and property values. Increased job opportunities. I live and work at Fishhawk Lake. I had two employees last year. I have one now. People are starting to desire living in an improved environment. All of the things that we're talking about will create an environment where people want to live and work from their homes. As telecommuting becomes more widespread, our community will afford an ideal place to live and work. This will bring additional jobs and income to both Clatsop and Columbia counties. Conclusion. The reduction of community expenses caused by logging operations in the Fishhawk watershed from Oregon Department of Forestry will amount to $29,000 for our community alone in expenses per year. It would also lead to many other positives. While they're hard to put specific dollar values to, they are significant and many. What value should we put on the following? Improved quality of life, cleaner streams, better habitat for salmon, and increased salmon runs, less dredging activity on the lake. We have a dredge operating in our lake 2 months a year, and it's in the summer. That's the only time we're even allowed to dredge. So that takes away from a lot of the quality that we all have moved there for. Higher quality drinking water, safer roads, increased recreational quality, and older forests. All of these factors will certainly lead to everyone's property being more valuable and more lots being developed. This will lead to higher property taxes for both Clatsop and Columbia County. It will improve our quality of life. We'll be leaving our children and theirs a better place to live. This balanced approach makes economic and environmental sense. Fishhawk Lake and our community supply much-needed income to our rural economy and have the potential to contribute much more. By showing the economic and quality of life benefits that would come from passage of SB 430 to our community, we hope you can see some of the long-term benefits that would arise to our rural counties and our state. We need your help. Please have the long-term vision, please have the long-term vision to see the economic values of this bill. Help rural Oregon break its downward spiral by letting us take advantage of the incredible natural resources we have. This balanced bill will allow communities like ours to draw telecommuters and businesses that value the quality of life that our state can provide. Please support SB 430. In hearing some of the other people talk, I just had a couple quick comments I'd like to say.
Yes, very quickly.
I respectfully disagree that the current Oregon Department of Forestry plan for our forest is a balanced approach. In our watershed, clear cuts on 17% of this land with another 7% clear cut within 10 years is not balanced. Road building and siltation at four times the natural rates is not balanced for either our community or the fish and the fishing industry. I was a member of the Astoria, Oregon Department of Forestry District Focus Group for the draft implementation plan, and I'm sorry to say that I did not feel public input was truly valued in that process or listened to. I drove to Astoria, which is an hour-plus drive at night, for about 10 weeks, and I felt that we were not listened to and that was not looking for public input. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Troy. We have three other people so far on our list that have come more than 100 miles. Troy and Jeff were four, though Jeff yielded his time. Gus and Joe Meyer are in the against category. Let's get them up here. If they're still here, are they here? Gus or Joe? Gus and Joe Meyer. And then we have one more that's come more than 100 miles. That's Barbara McLaughlin in the four category. And that'll have it pretty well balanced. I'm going to stay, but again, Senate floor session is coming now within 20 minutes. So make your comments as quickly as you can.
I will. I believe Gus is yielding his time.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair Shields and members of the committee. My name is Joe Meyer. I'm from Tillamook, and I want to thank the committee for hearing my testimony. I'm a past president of the local water district, and I'm a past chairman of the Regional Water District Advisory Committee. Both of these districts rely on water from the Tillamook Burn. Senate Bill 430 seems to intimate that consumptive uses of the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests affect drinking water. However, the riparian assessment and analysis of the Trask River watershed indicates that water quality remains high even when and where logging has taken place. Investments made by Tillamook County in the Tillamook Burn were investments of growth or deferred income, much like investment accounts where early returns are reinvested or deferred partially or in total in favor of a larger future income to the investors. Senate Bill 430 uses a period of deferred income to set limits on future income. This is clearly unfair to Tillamook County, the schools, and other beneficiaries of the Tillamook Burn income who have been investing for over 40 years. On the very eve of maturity, when the income of this deferred growth is needed so desperately, to have others who are perhaps against the rehabilitation of the burn now try to acquire the benefit of the rehabilitation is abhorrent and just wrong. Nearly 57% of Oregon's forest land is federal forest land, that provides for and is legally designated for non-consumptive uses. The Tillamook Burn, under the Northwest Oregon State Forest Management Plan, will provide clean water, habitat, recreation, jobs, and money to support schools and government services. Static forest management strategies come at the expense of fire, pest, and disease protection. Thinning and other techniques of active management are needed to reduce these risks and create jobs. I believe that the conflict caused by the adoption of Senate Bill 430 would alienate the majority of Oregonians who want fair management of our forests. Thank you very much.
And what water district did you say you're from?
The Latimer Road Water District is my local water district, and the Kilchis Regional Water District is the one I was chairman of the advisory committee.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony this morning. I'm impressed with the quality and the thoughtfulness of all who've testified this morning. I really appreciate it. We have two more folks, Barbara McLaughlin and Gareth Ferdin, who've come over 100 miles. I appreciate one of the Myers who yielded his time this morning. In fact, all of you who've yielded your time and you who will return on Wednesday, I want to remind you that the full committee should be here back from various parts of the country by Wednesday morning. Go ahead. Let's see. You're Barbara?
I am. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Senator Shields and Senator Fisher, for allowing me to testify. My name is Barbara McLaughlin, and I live in Wheeler. And I've been on the North Coast for 28 years, 14 years in Cannon Beach in Clatsop County, and now 14 years in Wheeler. And I'm here. I wanted you to know that there are a number of citizens in my area who are in favor of Senate Bill 430. Excuse me. And I'm here on behalf of the forest. The forest is a deep love of mine, and I'm concerned that the structure-based management is not a balanced plan. And I'm concerned that all the trees would be managed in some way so that we would have no older trees left, that they would be cut so that they could be then grown again into older trees. That doesn't make sense to me, and I think it's important that we look at the whole ecosystem and not just trees as timber. And I don't think a tree farm is a forest. It's a complex system that I think it's important that humans begin to understand that they're only one piece of life on this planet, and then we have to look at the whole. So I'm here to speak for the forest and the ecosystem. And I would like to applaud the Tillamook Rainforest Coalition for coming up with a balanced plan that I believe addresses all users fairly. So I do understand that the school districts are tied to timber money, and I would love to see that issue separated. And I know these are hard times and schools are suffering everywhere. And I would love to see that topic separated. So I appreciate the time that you've given me and your courtesy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Gareth?
My name is Gareth Ferdin. I'm retired. I live in the city of Nehalem. My professional background is research, planning, and organizational development with California state government. I manage the planning activities in the California Youth Authority for about a 15-year period. I participated as a member of the focus group that reviewed the Tillamook District Implementation Plan and spent a considerable amount of time studying Department of Forestry documents and making comments on Department of Forestry proposals. I like much of what was in the Forest Management Plan. It seemed to be a real effort to provide a plan that would meet the multiple demands on our state forests. And I particularly like the greatest permanent value, the goals, and the guiding principles. And I think I'm in the category of people who like the forest management plan, with the exception of maybe 5 or 10% of it. And I think most of the people who we're speaking to in favor of 430 are in that same category. There's just this part of it that we have some concerns about. In my opinion, however, the Department of Forestry's implementation plans and annual operations plans, which outline what the department actually intends to do, are unsatisfactory. There is little chance, of changing these laws, these plans, without outside support. I believe that 430 can provide that support. The Park and Forestry brought together a diverse group of people from our local community to review and make recommendations for improving their draft Tillamook District Implementation Plan. That group reached consensus on 14 recommendations. There were timber industry representatives there and environmental representatives, county representatives, and so on. 14 recommendations with consensus. I'd like to talk about two of those recommendations. We recommended that the Department of Forestry improve its planning for wildlife by stating the current and desired future conditions of wildlife and their habitat. We also recommended that the department expand its recreational opportunities beyond that provided in the draft plan. Both of these support and recommendations were rejected by the department. They contended that the projection stand structure contained in the draft plan was all the planning that needed to be done for wildlife. That stand structure that we had up here said that's all the planning we need to do for wildlife. We can simply ignore any other issues. The final, there was a, mentioned earlier, there was a discussion of a plan that was developed for recreation on the coast back in the early 1990s. That plan indicated there was a great deal of need for expansion of recreational activities in the North Coast region, a great deal of opportunity for improved recreational opportunities. The six-year implementation plan that was developed by the Department of Forestry about that point in time focused on managing current resources and not adding additional resources. The long-term portion of the plan that was identified at that time talked about trail improvements and additional camping spaces, etc. So for the last 10 years, there's been little in the way of new recreational activity that's been made available in the forest. In August of 2000, the department published a report titled The Tillamook State Forest Recreation Plan 2000. This plan carried forward the six-year emphasis on management of recreational program maintenance of existing facilities and develop interpretive programs. There are almost none of the objectives and actions provide for the development of new recreational opportunities. The 14 county Northwest Oregon region tourists spent $3.8 billion in 2000. The Cool Course Oregon Coast attracts summer visitors from a wide variety of places. Nehalem State Park and Oswell West provide a wealth of recreational opportunities and do brisk visits during the summer. On the other hand, the Department of Forestry campgrounds at Nehalem Falls and dispersed campsites along the main stem and Cold Creek provide only limited space. Hiking trails are few and short. A shift in the management focus to create greater recreational opportunities has the potential for making a significant contribution to the economy, Nehalem economy. The timber industry has been shrinking in our region. The share of personal income from Clatsop and Tillamook counties fell from 14.3% in 1969 to only 3.3% in 1999. By 2000, only 4.6% of the Tillamook and Clatsop counties, 23,000 workers, were employed by the timber industry. Given the relatively small amount of federal lands in the counties, this reduction cannot be attributed to reduced logging on these lands. The department's implementation operational plans focus on logging and provide only limited information about what the department will do on other aspects of the government permanent value. I believe that AB 430 provides a vehicle that will benefit both the county and local economy and wildlife while protecting some income for schools in the county. As we heard earlier, it will provide the same we've had previously, but it's not going to provide the increase in revenue that the other people, that the counties and schools have come to expect.
Thank you, Gareth, for your testimony. Senator Fisher, any questions?
No.
We've had a lot of testimony this morning, and it's been balanced yes and no, yes and no, yes and no. I appreciate the way everybody has been very respectful of one another. I think I need to stop there because I've had a couple yeses, and without any more no's, I'm going to stop. until Wednesday. Wednesday, I think the whole committee will be here. We will start with the two senators that are the sponsors of the two bills, and it should be an interesting time that we will have. I wish I could go a little bit longer, but I have less than 10 minutes to make it to the floor. I want to acknowledge receipt of written comments for the record from David Mildrexler, Adrian and Amanda Stacy, Jennifer Angel, Tim Cuthbertson, Susan Tone, and Lynn Herring. That's all been received in writing. Those are some people who obviously won't be able to probably get back on Wednesday, but I appreciate the many, many people who've said they will come back on Wednesday and share with us. And so I thank you for that. We've got pros and cons all coming back on Wednesday on these two bills. Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the committee for this morning.